Well, this is a sermon about gratitude, about naming the goodness. And Katie hinted at earlier what I perhaps am most grateful for. I feel like I'm vibrating with gratitude up here for you, whether you know me or not. The fact is that a church is an organism that new members join and it grows. And some of you have never heard of me before, but you're still a part of the institution who made me a minister. And the first time I wore this stole, I was kneeling on that exact spot as you ordained me and then laid hands on me through a holy prayer. So I am grateful to you for forever being part of my life as a minister. So gratitude, I mean, what I just did, that sounds simple enough. You know what gratitude is. You just heard me do it. You've been practicing because Thanksgiving was not long ago, so you know what gratitude feels like and what it sounds like. For me, another way of talking about gratitude is naming the goodness. So just to make sure that we know how to do that, let us right now name the goodness in our lives. Go ahead and if you feel like it, just say out loud something you're grateful for. And then you all smiled. And that's what I love about that. As soon as we start listing the things we're grateful for, we start smiling. So that was easy, right? Let's call it a day. Let's just go to coffee hour. No. Not so fast. Not so fast. Because there are ways in which gratitude is not that simple. For a long time, I thought gratitude was a straightforward phenomenon, so obvious that, in fact, Anne Lamott's a Christian writer, she lives in the area. Anne Lamott's new book is about the big three prayers. The big three are please, thanks, and wow. Right? It's one of the top three. Now, leave it to a Unitarian Universalist minister to complicate things. Because I no longer believe that gratitude is as simple as just saying, thanks. This is great. About a year ago, a funny thing happened to me. I started to realize that gratitude can sound an awful lot like self-congratulation. And to me, the problem is that those two things come from opposite spiritual poles. They're grounded in wholly different stances toward life. So if you keep your eyes and your ears open, you'll begin to hear or see what I'm talking about. Most of the time, gratitude is our saying thank you. It's a receiving, and it carries a sense of humility, right? Which is why ordinands, for example, kneel after they're ordained. The humility of receiving and saying thank you. And sometimes that thank you communicates an acknowledgement that there's something larger and more powerful than we are. My colleague Christine Robinson relates a folk tale about an elderly Russian man whose grandchildren begged him for a story. And they said, we want you to tell us a story from the old country. Tell us a story about your life. And so the man stroked his beard, and he thought, and he said, okay, here's a story. Here's a true story about my father. It was the bitterest cold of winter, and your great-grandfather needed to ride his horse to a town several miles away to buy supplies for the winter. And while he was on his way home, a blizzard struck. A snowstorm that was so fierce that he could soon see no further in front of him than his own arm, than the nose of his horse. And he could hear the wolves howling through the wind of the blizzard. And the sun was dim, and he started to feel scared. He thought, you know, I might not make it home through this blizzard. And the grandchildren listening were starting to kind of clutch together, and their eyes got big as they listened to their story. And the grandfather held up a finger, and he said, you know what your great-grandfather did? he loosened the reins of the horse on the bridle, and he prayed. And he said, "It's in your hands now, God. It's in your hands." And he sat back, and he let the horse walk through the thick blizzard, and the wolves, the sound of the wolves was still audible, and the horse picked up its pace and began trotting, and your grandfather kept praying and said, your great-grandfather said, "God, I trust in you. I trust in you." And he thought about his wife at home, and he thought about me and my six siblings and wondered how they'd get by without a father. And then, through the snow gales, he saw a dim light, and it got a little brighter and a little brighter, and he realized that the horse had found his way home. And he put the horse in the barn and, nearly frozen, stumbled in through the front door where all of us kids were and my mother. And he told us how scared he'd been, and he made us get down on our knees and offer a prayer of thanks to God. So the storytelling had ended. And he leaned back and he watched his grandchildren's smiles. But one of them, the youngest, leaned over to a cousin and said, "I think they should have thanked the horse." So here's what my colleague Christine Robinson says. She says, "In the end, I have come to believe there's only a shade of difference between thanking God and thanking the horse." And I see her point, and here's why. To be thankful, to be truly thankful, means that you are in a relationship with someone or something. If gratitude is about receiving, saying thank you points to a giver, maybe with a capital G or a small g. But sometimes when I hear people expressing appreciation, or they think that that's what they're doing, what I hear is the opposite. Sometimes, even though I know that they're claiming to be grateful, I hear people setting themselves apart and above from others with not a lot of humility, no relationship to anyone but themselves as the sole agent of their good fortune or abundance. And I call that shaky gratitude. The question that separates solid gratitude from shaky gratitude is, where does that goodness come from? What's its source? What is the source of the gift in our lives? The blessings, the good fortune, the gifts. Here's another story, a true story this time. Some of you might recall, or you might have actually experienced this personally. Last Christmas, there was some really nasty weather in parts of the country, right? And a whole bunch of airports got shut down, and people got stranded for days in certain airports in certain areas of the country. Well, I was still in California, and the day after Christmas was one of those blue sky t-shirt days. And I went to go visit a friend on the train. So I was standing on the Amtrak platform, and as the train rolled in, you know, another couple came up to the yellow line. And I was so excited about the trip, I turned to them and I said, "Aren't we lucky? The train's on time. And there are so many people who had to sleep in airports last night and will not get to their families for days." And they both nodded their agreement, but the woman turned and said, "Yeah, I guess so, but we make our own luck, don't we? Because we're the ones who chose to live here." Yeah, in an earthquake zone, so that's not going to... That's not going to hold up under every circumstance, right? So in one sense, she was right. At the time, I chose to live in Southern California, in the land of palm trees. I chose to be with that congregation. I chose to stay there for the holidays rather than schlepping myself up to my relatives. And yet, I couldn't get her comment out of my head. We make our own luck. We're experiencing this beautiful day because of the choice that I made. Do we really make our own luck? Are we really the sole architects of our lives, down to geography and weather patterns? I mean, does that mean, I'm going to take this a little bit further, even though it's a bit facetious. Does that really mean that the people sleeping in the Denver airport last December just made a bad choice? Did they create their bad luck? I don't mean to belabor this except for two things. First, while I believe that goodness, call it grace, call it compassion, call it comfort, arises from the conditions that we set, and I do believe that we kind of set a table for grace and abundance to visit us, I also believe that luck, good or bad, is often the result of a random, wildly chaotic universe. Right? It's just that simple. Whether it's winning the lottery or a hurricane making landfall on the East Coast, our lives are shaped by mystery and by circumstances beyond our control. When that mystery moves in spectacular ways, saying thank you is not just a polite thing to say to the universe. It also keeps us appropriately humble. Here's the second reason I'm picking apart this breezy comment about we make our own luck. This shaky sounding gratitude is the narrative underlying some of our country's political dialogue. And I find it harmful. The claim that this wonderful life I have is here only because of me and nobody else, right? We dream, that's true. We work, that's true. We hard scrabble up the rungs of our imagination and circumstance, or so the story goes, and sometimes the story goes, we make our own luck. And whatever we've achieved, we've earned by ourselves. What I hear missing in that narrative is relationship. That's what troubles me as a Unitarian Universalist, since our faith is grounded in relationship. Relationship with each other, with those who, however invisible, gave rise to the people we are today, personally or institutionally. In a historic sense, I think that this is important to remember. I think it's part of our DNA. In a historic sense, Unitarian Universalists wrapped ourselves in the fabric of covenant hundreds of years ago, a promise to walk together with love and caring, a long time before the phrase right relationship was ever used. As early as 1629, when a ship named Arabella carried a hold full of Puritans to the Massachusetts Bay Colony. Those religious ancestors of ours, those reformers, those rebels from whom we descend in how we organize ourselves, they declared a new way of being. Listen to these words. We are knit together as one body. If one member suffers, all suffer with it. If one be in honor, all rejoice with it. The ligaments of this body which knit together are love. No body can be perfect which wants its perfect proper ligament. That's religious language. It has everything to do with how we approach and respond to life, including how we give thanks. If one be in honor, all rejoice with it. And aside from that little history lesson, there's a personal angle to this too. Our relationship with the families and the communities that have shaped us down to the biological odds that were handed to us. Because this is what I believe. Much of what I have, I did not earn. What's mine is not entirely mine any more than the oxygen that flows through my lungs is mine. I have received so generously from the generosity of other people and from privilege. Now, when I say that I've received through privilege, I know that that can be a hard word to like. I know it's kind of a little haughty, and sometimes it feels like a judgy word to say privilege. So let me provide an alternate definition. Privilege to me is just having a long reach or a wide umbrella. It means you have many occasions on which you might hear yourself saying, "I'm lucky." When you have a long reach, you can find and grasp resources efficiently. Sometimes it's because of your alma mater, or a generous family member, or a well-timed scholarship. Any way it arrives, a long reach greases your wheels. You can navigate in the world with a little less effort than other people can. And as the image of a wide umbrella suggests, privilege also shelters its holders. We don't have to see certain things. You don't have to endure certain things. You don't even have to know about certain things. And as I've been arguing, if you've got that wide umbrella and a long reach, and then there's all this randomness in the universe, when you don't examine that carefully, it gets called luck. And the problem is when we use that to congratulate ourselves on how wonderful we are, instead of humbly bowing to mystery or just thanking the horse. Every Christmas, Spain holds a national lottery that is huge. It's called El Gordo, the fat one. It's a huge payout. And not too many years ago, a man won El Gordo, a giant payout, with a ticket that ended in the number 48. And of course, the reporters said, "How did you pick the numbers? What was your secret? How did you win this magnificent fortune?" And the man said, "Well, here's my secret. For 7 days in a row, I dreamed about the number 7. And 7 times 7... is 48. It's true. The story's true. So I believe that we are the co-creators of our lives. We shape the raw material we're given, either through work or temperament, and each of us owes a debt of gratitude to random luck and to circumstance. The good grace to be born into a family that, say, prizes education, or to have a friend who let us know about a job opening. And just in case you're one of the people here whose shoes I have walked in, just in case you're in a place where it's really hard to find anything to be grateful for, because sometimes we get to those places, and it is a struggle to name even 3 things that are good about our life, I just want to say that you are still in relationship with yourself and with your greater than you. And sometimes it is enough to say, "I am so grateful that I choose to speak to myself with love and compassion." Or, "I am just so grateful that there is something larger than me and that I'm not alone in this world." Life is a gift. Many of our days are filled with quiet beauty and subtle grace, and when we receive these gifts, we respond to life, and we are in relationship with that which is stronger and wiser than us. I don't have to know to whom I'm speaking when I say thank you. Being grateful is enough, whether it's out loud, or it's an internal thrill. Offering thanks just suggests that the mystery is outside of me, and it's wiser than I am, and it's bigger than I am, and it is more generous and abundant than this little finite self. As members of the human family, we're bound up and we need one another in ways obvious and invisible. We live in relationship with one another so that we remember who we are and whose we are. As we knit ourselves together in love, may we be gentle companions to one another, and may we keep offering thanks. May it be so.